Get ready for a brand new season of Sports Talk. Join Ian Levenstein, Jason Green, Joey Maggs, and all the rest on The Sporting Goods. Mondays from 3 to 4 on Brooklyn College Radio 1090 AM and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. It's all part of the 5-Hour Sports Block on Mondays. Hey folks, it's Ian Levenstein. Before this episode gets started, I realized something after the fact. I forgot to ask my listeners this lovely question. I have been having major trouble with Skype and basically any sort of VoIP lately. Whenever I start up a VoIP system, it'll go for about 39 seconds and then it will completely freeze. When I go into the task manager to get rid of the program, it will say that it is quit, but it will still be there. Skype.exe, when I go to close it directly, it will not close, and it will hang in my system until I restart the computer. So please, if anybody has had similar problems, or if anybody knows anything about Skype that they can help me out, and this would be Gizmo as well, please send me an email. I would highly thank you about 8,000 times, because this is really starting to get annoying and I'd love to be able to use Skype to do some interviews sometime in the future. Anyway, that's really all I got to say for this prequel here. Let's get the real show on the road now, shall we? Let's get some more excitement here and less questioning. All right, that works. Bye-bye.
Live from the campus of Brooklyn College, it is Geek Speak with Ian Levenstein. Ladies and gentlemen, Ian Levenstein.
Hey there, everybody. My name is Ian Levenstein, and welcome to Geek Speak here on Brooklyn College Radio 1090 AM and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. And of course, as always, we are podcasting at speakgeekspeak.com. Michael Jordan's favorite episode, number 23, is ready to roll here, and we got plenty of wonderful technology, gaming, comics, the works news for you today. And for those of you who noticed, I put out a special 5-minute episode, a special report, as it were, live from my house last night with my brand new microphone. You'll be hearing more of that in the future, beginning with a special Geek Speak, which will either be recorded Sunday night or early Monday, which of course will cover the New York Comic Con, which I will be bringing audio equipment too. So hopefully I'll have a couple of interviews with some creators, and hopefully it'll be a wonderful, wonderful time. I'm sure it will be. Anyway, let's get into the thick of things here. On today's show, we're going to start things off with information on a worm that is targeting Macintosh. Yeah, that's right. There's actually something that's targeting a Macintosh for once, and this one's targeting it through Bluetooth. What you can do to stop it from happening, we'll give you some information. Also, out of CNN, two stories from CNN today. The entire city of Chicago is about to get a bit faster. Citywide Wi-Fi coming soon. And should this happen everywhere? In my opinion, yes, but you'll get further information on that as the show goes on. Also, a PSP killer / iPod killer, the Viliv P1, might very well be coming to the States. And I love talking about things that are not iPods or PSPs, but devices that are similar to them. And I'll talk about that similar item on today's show. Also, very interesting news coming out of Star Trek land. Star Trek Online is coming soon. Brand new addiction for all the Trekkies out there who have been waiting to have a Star Trek experience online. Well, now you're going to get that opportunity. And I'm going to have a comic rant on the restarting in comics that tends to happen on a regular basis. Is there any point to it, or is it just yet another one of those marketing gimmicks? And of course, by restarting, I mean restarting with a brand new issue one after 12 issues of a series. It's kind of interesting, and I'll get into that. And also, probably somewhere in between that, an Amish teen got fined for wiretapping, and I just find that odd and somewhat disturbing. And we'll talk about that as well. But let's get things started with the big news coming out of CNN.com's technology section. And as always, thank you very much to David Price for giving me the information. My right-hand man, as it were, for stories for the show has definitely stepped it up once again. And thank you very much for that. Here is the news coming out of CNN.com's technology section. Worm targets Macs via Bluetooth. California, this is coming out of San Francisco, a new computer worm targeting Apple Computer Inc.'s Macintosh computers has been identified for the second time in 1 week, security experts said. The new worm called OSXINQTANA.A spreads through a vulnerability in Apple's OS X operating system via Bluetooth wireless connections, antivirus company Symantec said. We have speculated that attackers would turn their attention to the Mac platform. That worm attempts to spread via Apple's iChat instant messaging program, which is compatible with America Online's popular AIM instant messaging program. Symantec said the latest worm attempts to use Bluetooth connections to spread by searching for other Bluetooth using devices that will accept requests for a connection when the computer is restarted. Well, one thing that I definitely need to mention right off the bat here, no operating system is safe. Okay, even though the Macintosh is a much more secure operating system, it has been for years, than Windows, anything can happen at any time. And there are plenty of smart hackers out there who are going to find these security flaws in any operating system, whether it be Linux, whether it be Macintosh, whether it be Windows. And now they just happen to find a blaring vulnerability in OS X. So what are you going to do about this? Well, that's a damn good question. The latest worm was identified Friday. Both worms are ranked a level 1 threat on a scale of 1 to 5, with 5 being the most severe, Symantec said. Up until this time, there really haven't been too many viruses for the Mac. In fact, a lot of times, many insiders have said you don't even need virus software on a Macintosh computer because they're just that damn secure. And if you're careful, you can certainly avoid getting these worms. So I guess it's really up to you. I mean, whether you want to go out and get yourself one of the few Macintosh virus programs, you can go ahead and do so. If not, just be extra damn careful when you're getting on the internet, because these worms happen to everybody. Even sometimes, even though you have a virus program, these worms will still get in there through some sort of security hole that you just did not know about. And also, it can happen even when the virus companies don't know about it. See, these virus programs update a lot, but so do the viruses. It's a tough situation out there, period. Should we all fear that the change is beginning to happen, that the end of the world as we know it is about to come forth and destroy all hopes and dreams that we have for the Apple OS? Of course not. Jesus Christ, you've been watching way too many Steven Spielberg movies. The world will not end with a virus, okay? Just because there's one worm out there, or in this case, two, you're not going to die, all right? Be extra careful. You know, don't go to those prawn sites like Whoa, and you'll be perfectly safe. Make sure that when you use your Bluetooth connection that you're doing it in safety, okay? Make sure that you know exactly what you're doing with your Bluetooth. Don't just connect out of nowhere and hope that everything will be A-okay, because I know that there's Bluetooth wireless headsets as well. And those headsets work damn well. That's what Toby Cook, who has been a frequent visitor of my show, has used pretty much every single time he's been on. And it's a really, really good way to go about things. And by the way, speaking of Toby, I might as well just squeeze this in here right now to go on a sidetrack. It's pretty much been decided the people who will be on the Showcase Spotlight, which probably will be taped a week from tomorrow, will be Sean Whalen from the Comic Geek Speak forums, who has been a frequent contributor to them, and I met over at the Comic Geek Speak episode 100, and of course, the mainstay, Toby Cook. They'll both be involved with that Showcase Spotlight. But anyway, back to the OS X debacle here. I mean, careful is something that everybody should be in any situation. Using technology when crossing the street, when driving a car, when taking out a PSP disc, yeah, even that. You don't want it to fly across the room and break a lamp or something. It's just difficulties like this come along. And also, the fact that it one of these worms spread through iChat is really no shock to me, because a lot of those viruses spread through an AIM system, spread through a lot of different situations like that, and there's really not much you can do about it. I mean, you can sit back, relax, and hope that you're not going to become a target, but oftentimes it's hard to avoid such fate. So again, just be careful who you trade your songs with, be careful who you're having an instant message with, and be careful who you connect to through Bluetooth. And be careful about the devices you use when using Bluetooth. Bluetooth is awesome, okay? It's a wireless technology that's been fantastic, okay? It's also really damn simple, too, to use. And the simple things are usually the problems. You realize that? All of those simple things in life are the ones that cause the troubles. America Online, it's so simple. You log on and you're A-OK, and they use an Internet Explorer-based browser, and before you know it, you've got spyware out the wazoo. And all of a sudden, something doesn't start working right on your computer, and before you know it, AOL becomes the worst bloatware in the history of man. And then, of course, oh, it's so very simple, and I'm going to have to do this again, just for the sake of the world. Oh, it's so very, very simple. I'm just going to let my CD play right off the bat and click on autoplay. Well, that really helped the people who got that rootkit from Sony now, didn't it? Yeah. Computer users out there have got to really watch out. Okay, they got to make sure to backtrack their steps. They got to look behind them every single time they go out there on the internet, and they got to make sure that nothing bad happens. Even if you're a rudimentary user, okay, you should know the basics of computer use, okay? Never open up an attachment from somebody you don't know. That's number one. If you get an email from super hot babe number 3 with sexy pics inside, unless you have a friend by that name, and if so, she probably needs to seek counseling immediately for even getting such a name, don't open up that attachment. If you get an email from a friend that you know is a friend, and it's not in any way the way he usually talks online, chances are somebody hijacked his email account and is sending you a virus, because that has certainly happened before. A virus gets into your address book, sends itself out to everybody, and before you know it, the entire world is infected with this virus. Oh yeah, you know it. This virus, these worms that have been found, are on a much lesser scale than any of that. Apple is still the safest OS out there. It will probably continue to be that way for a very, very long time. Okay? Don't get your bonnet in a knot, okay? And if you're wearing a bonnet, good for you. Not many people wear them these days. But please, okay, don't freak out about this. Whatever you do, don't throw your Mac out the window just because there's a worm, all right? Bill Gates is still the enemy. Jobs is still kind of cool. And OS X is still the better operating system in my mind. Even if Vista looks all nice and shiny, chances are OS X will still have it beat. This has been the Apple portion of today. Let's move it on to wireless, shall we? So I wonder out there, and some of you listeners should probably let me know about this, I wonder how many people out there are from Chicago, people who are listening to the show right now, because those of you who live in Chicago, I am about to envy you. I am about to bow down to your greatness, because Chicago is probably doing the smartest damn thing out of any city out there. Philadelphia, eat your heart out. This is coming out of CNN yet again. Chicago planning for citywide Wi-Fi. Windy City Network would eclipse Philadelphia. The nationwide rush to go wireless appears poised to extend to its biggest city yet. Chicago is launching an effort to offer wireless broadband, city officials said Friday, jumping on the hi-fi Wi-Fi bandwagon. And yes, I added that hi-fi in there. As similar initiatives proceed in Philadelphia, San Francisco, and smaller cities, Chicago has hundreds of Wi-Fi hotspots in places like coffee shops, bookstores, and libraries, and XXX movie theaters, okay, maybe not that, where anyone can walk in, sit down, and connect to the web. Hoping to extend that wireless blanket to all 228 square miles, the city plans to ask technology companies this spring to submit proposals for the project. While it's too soon to say how the system would operate, the goal is to make internet access broad and affordable for residents and heighten Chicago's appeal for businesses and tourists alike, according to Chris O'Brien, the city's chief information officer. The city did not specify goals for how much the system would charge for access. In Philadelphia, Earthlink Incorporated is building a citywide network that would charge a wholesale rate of $9 a month to internet service providers that would then resell access to the public at an undetermined price. We think it's important for residents of the city and tourists and businesses to have lots of different ways to connect, O'Brien said. For a city as big as Chicago, with the vibrant business community and diverse citizen base that we have, you want to make sure all kinds of technology are available to them as they work and enjoy entertainment options. If all things go smoothly, the system could be running as soon as 2007. That would be amazing. The size of a Chicago network would dwarf Philadelphia's planned 135-square-mile network or anything now in place. Currently, the biggest municipal Wi-Fi network is the all-free MetroFi in the South San Francisco Bay Area at 35 square miles, according to Wi-Fi expert Glenn Fleischman. By spring, the title will be passed to one covering nearly 110 square miles in the neighboring Phoenix suburbs of Tempe and Chandler, Arizona. So this is something that really needed to happen, and sites beside Philadelphia that have Wi-Fi projects out of for a proposal in the last 4 months alone include Portland, Oregon, San Francisco, Anaheim, Pasadena, and Long Beach, California, Denver and Aurora, Colorado, Minneapolis, Milwaukee, Grand Rapids, Michigan, Pittsburgh, Arlington, Virginia, and Brookline, Massachusetts. That's Brookline, Massachusetts, not Brooklyn, New York. You wouldn't believe how many times people have said Brookline instead of Brooklyn or Brooklyn instead of Brookline. Oh, my dear God. It's a good move. It really is. Wi-Fi is probably the thing that's replacing everything for a lot of these internet providers. The best thing about Wi-Fi is that so many people out there have either their wireless devices or their laptops where they'd love to just be able to go on a network at any point in time. And that's exactly what Wi-Fi allows you to do, because you'll have that bandwidth right off the bat. It's pretty damn simple. All you got to do is just connect to the network and you're on. Now, the one thing that gets me about Wi-Fi networks, especially open Wi-Fi networks, is that pretty much anybody can see what you're doing. So if you're smart, you won't be trading songs or anything like that, because this might be a way for the police to find out about you. However, Wi-Fi in principle is a wonderful, wonderful idea. The idea of a citywide Wi-Fi network got a big thumbs up from several Chicagoans who were sitting in cafes with their laptops on this past Friday. And frankly, I can't blame them, okay? Because these laptop people, like I said, they want to get their internet everywhere, not just at a random Starbucks. And this is going to allow them to do that. Also, people with, you know, your PDAs or your Palm Pilots and your wireless internet connections on your cell phones, and, of course, the beautiful Blackberries, which very well might not be around too much longer, all have this sort of wonderful technology that they'd love to use, and now they can. Yeehaw. And the major cities, of course. San Francisco is a really, really large city, okay? Philadelphia is a really, really large city, but Chicago is one of the greats, all right? It has one of the largest buildings in the world, and it's just like New York, basically. You know, I mean, there's Chicago, there's New York, there's Los Angeles, the big three, as you will. And I guess you can throw Boston in there, and Philadelphia and San Francisco and cities like that, I guess, would be on a lesser scale. But when Chicago does something, other people notice. when places like Chicago step up and add extra technology to people's lives, people will notice, as already noticed here, because how often does CNN cover Wi-Fi technology news? Not too big, you know? I mean, some people, I'm sure, know about the San Francisco move. I myself knew about it. The Philadelphia move, I didn't really hear too much about. Chicago, I really take interest in. Because, hell, if Chicago can do it, why can't Manhattan? Or how about even the five borough area? My God, I would love to be able to get a laptop, which I'll probably end up getting sometime in the next year or two or something along those lines, and just go anywhere and use my Wi-Fi connection. The one thing, though, watch where you're crossing. That's all I got to say, okay? And I mean, I say this while laughing, but I do actually mean it, okay? Watch where you're going. Just like when you're in a car and you're trying to use a cell phone, if you're on your PDA, you know, text messaging or instant messaging while you're crossing the street with that Wi-Fi connection, you got to watch out. Try not to get hit by a car, all right? I'm worried about you, Chicago. I'm happy for you, but I'm worried for you at the same time. I don't want to start seeing people with their laptops, you know, dangling them as they're walking down the street, passing by individuals, and before you know it, they hit a pole, because that's going to hurt the laptop and probably your head. So be careful, all right? I know Wi-Fi is a great thing. I know that it's really, really nice that you have it now, but don't go overboard, all right? Please, for your sakes. I don't want to start hearing things on the news. Motorist drives over man while using his PDA. No, that's just not cool. Wi-Fi is a good thing and a bad thing at the same time, but still much more of a good thing. I'm certainly happy for Chicago, and I hope that this lasts for a long, long time. And you know what? Speaking of wires, this is where I'm probably going to stick this in right here. I found this on Dig earlier today, and right away, I'm really starting to worry, okay? This is coming out of the Northwestern.com, and again, I got this off of Dig. An Amish teen was fined for wiretapping. Yeah, let me say that again, okay? I was just talking about wireless, so now switching over to wires is probably a nice transition. But an Amish teen got fined for wiretapping. An Amish teenager will pay a fine and restitution to a neighbor for illegally tapping into his telephone line. James Bontrager, 17, out of Grand River Road, pleaded guilty in Green Lake County Circuit Court January 23rd to a charge of telecommunications fraud. He was fined $367 and ordered to pay $36.09 in long-distance charges to CenturyTel for calls the teen made on his neighbor's phone line to a relative in Indiana. The Amish traditionally shun telephones, gee, no really, and other modern conveniences in their homes. Yeah, like ordering out for pizza. It's kind of hard to do. When confronted by Green Lake County Sheriff's Deputy Matthew Van Kolk, and by the way, you're just really waiting to be a movie star with a name like Matthew Van Kolk, James Bontrager led the deputy to a shed on his property where he had brought his neighbor's phone line inside. He also surrendered the phone he had been using to call relatives, the documents said. Bontrager claimed he did not know the neighbor would be charged for the calls. Are you kidding me? Come on, you got to be smarter than that. Well, I mean, sure, you're Amish, so I'm sure you don't really know too much about phones, but if you knew enough to get the line, you know that you're probably going to end up charging the dude for this. The wiretapping occurred after the Bontragers did some construction on their property last summer. James Bontrager's father, Vernon Bontrager, told police he had seen his son digging in a flower bed near the house and suggested his son did the wiretapping to contact Indiana relatives with whom he had been very close prior to moving to Markeson about 5 years ago. Now, all right, I can understand really wanting to get in touch with your relatives, and I can understand the fact that you're Amish is probably going to make that really, really difficult, but illegal wiretapping, not cool, especially when the government does it. Hi, Patriot Act, how are you? But it's even worse when it starts spreading to the Amish. I can't believe I just said those words. But seriously, I mean, is that what society has come to? You know, the Amish are beginning to get corrupted by our society, and they want the technology so badly that they'll steal it from others? Is that really what we've come to? Is that really what the Amish stand for? Because they certainly do not stand for that last I checked. It's a difficult situation. It's a kid. It's a 17-year-old. And 17-year-olds these days, when was the last time you knew a 17-year-old that didn't have an internet connection? Okay, when was the last time you knew a 17-year-old that didn't have a cell phone? When was the last time you knew a 17-year-old that hasn't heard of MySpace? Well, this guy is an Amish teenager. He probably has never even seen MySpace in his life, unless he used that wiretap to go on the internet. But then he'd have to steal a computer, and I doubt that actually happened. And I mean, these days, the Amish are a bit more lenient. I mean, there are certain Amish communities that have even installed a payphone, but still, this is a bit much here. I hope the guy learns his lesson. I hope he enjoys his horse and buggy, and I hope he never does it again, because it would be bad to have an Amish hacker on our hands. And by the way, isn't that a contradiction in terms in general? Do you stop becoming Amish as soon as you become a hacker? That's what I'm wondering. Like, do you drive your horse and buggy out to the internet cafe to chat with some buddies on Instant Messenger? That I highly doubt. Do you go over to play some Half-Life 2 with the guys and then head back home and churn some butter? No. Last I checked, that does not happen. It's a really silly story, and I can't believe I'm actually talking about it, but it's still amusing, you know? Has it come to the point where the Amish are way too behind the times? It's a good question to ask. I mean, when a child turns to wiretapping just to get the phone line, that's a bit much. So maybe this guy will decide one day he doesn't want to be Amish anymore, or maybe one day the Amish will decide, telephone isn't a crazy box full of demons after all. And apologies to any Amish that are listening, but if there are any Amish listening, stop listening. You shouldn't have a computer. God. So, once again, those people who have been listening to the show for a while now know that I like talking about handhelds, which is interesting because I've never really had a handheld in my life. And yet, it's usually the focus of my shows because, you know, even though I don't have a handheld, the idea of one is still an interesting fact, okay? The PSP, I'd love to have a PSP someday, but it's just not in the cards right now. I'd love to have a DS someday, but it's really not in the cards now either. You know, it's a really difficult situation to think of. However, there is a new PSP / iPod killer out there. And I talked about some of the Zen products out there, like the Creative Zen Micro in the past. And iRivers G10, which was their version of the PSP killer, which I really haven't heard much of about since I talked about it on the show. But I'm going to have to look into that because that actually did look like a pretty interesting media / game player. So there are a lot of iPod / PSP options out there. And now here's the review out of CNET.com of the Viliv P1. Several blog sites are spreading the news about Episodix Media Viliv P1 and its arrival stateside, but I think i4u News says it best by describing this portable video player as the bastard child of a Sony PSP and an iPod. Ouch. The P1 has the landscape layout and widescreen of a PSP, along with the click wheel of an iPod. No doubt, it'll be subject to some scrutiny by Apple. At first blush, the P1 is quite attractive, both in looks and in features. The 30GB device measures 6.3 by 2.9 by 0.7 inches and weighs just 8.8 ounces. Its Macromedia Flash interface looks easy to navigate and pleasantly graphic. Considering it has a 4-inch diagonal screen with QVGA resolution, it's probably ideal for watching video content on the go, DivX, XVID, MPEG-1, MPEG-2, MPEG-4, and SWF files can be played directly on the device, and ASF and WMV files are supported with transcoding. The P1 plays back MP3 and WMA audio content through episodic media site. Also mentions OGG, AC3, and AAC support. Oh my god, I'm in love. You can also view JPEG, PNG, and BMP image files, and there's a compact flash card slot for direct offloading from a digital camera. Other features include an FM tuner and recorder. Oh my god! Voice and line in recording, built-in speakers, and AV output. There's nothing impressive about the P1's 11-hour rated battery life for audio, ouch, but the 6-hour video rating is enticing. I just fell in love with this player. The fact that it has all of those encodings available, the fact that it plays SWF files, and I remember in the past, I was talking to some people who had SWF collections, and they were trying to convert them. Well, with this, you would not need them. You'd just be able to go on the go and have yourself a lovely SWF collection on your Viliv P1. And the fact that it has the scroll wheel, I like the scroll wheel. I really do. I think it's an interesting creative choice. And the fact that Apple doesn't 100% own the copyright to it means other people can use it. And that's what the Viliv has done here. The screen size is gorgeous. I mean, even looking at the screen shot they have here of the player, it looks like it's a very, very handy machine. And again, DivX, XVID, MPEG-1, MPEG-2, MPEG-4, and SWF files, and ASF and WMV. It's just everything I could possibly want in a portable player. I think out of all the players that I've seen, this would be the one that I want to get. It doesn't play games, but then again, who actually has a PSP to play games? I'm sorry. And I'm sure there are people out there who do play the PSP games, but seriously, when was the last time you heard anything about a PSP game? I mentioned it before, I'll mention it again. It's an interesting situation here, especially considering the fact that it literally is a combination of a PSP and an iPod. The good things about a PSP and the great things about an iPod all jammed into one. It's a 30 gigabyte system. So, again, no idea of the price yet, but the fact that it has 30 gigs of storage, so that's pretty much the size of a middle-of-the-line iPod, and the fact that it has that beautiful screen, this might be something I spring for. This might be the system I decide to go with. I mean, it's a difficult decision to make because there's so many things out there on the market. I mean, Zen has plenty of wonderful players, but the Viliv really looks awesome. Unless there's like some magic reason why it would suck that I'm just not seeing, this might be my media center of the future. All right, you might very well see me on the streets of Brooklyn with this stuck into my pocket. I see no reason otherwise. It's wow. When you get me speechless, okay, and I'm a guy who never shuts up. When you get me speechless about a product, you know I am intrigued. And that is exactly what I am right now. I am intrigued beyond belief. iPods usually run for about 60 gigs. That's the best iPod out there right now, the video iPod. And there are rumors spreading now farther across Internetville that a iPod video, an enhanced iPod video, will be coming out soon with a larger screen. So basically just an iPod with a larger screen that's capable, that's focused mainly upon video content, which will be absolutely lovely indeed. And also the fact that an actual iPod video store, or an iTunes video store that is, will be opening up sometime in the near future. So the iTunes and iPod side of things is looking pretty bright. The one thing that I'm not liking about the Viliv is that, and this is literally the one thing, there's no mention of DRM support on the MP3s and WMAs. So copyright encoded MP3s and WMAs you might not be able to play on here. But again, there are so many ways of breaking copyright out there. You know, there's so many easy ways to break encryption out there. JHIM used to be the situation of choice for most people. But the fact that iTunes 6 breaks JHIM, made it pretty difficult to use it. They're still trying to get out there and create a J-Hymn that works with iTunes 6. And as soon as they do, I'll make sure to let all my listeners know, because I am a huge fan of J-Hymn and have been for some time now. But it's going to be pretty difficult to get those copyright encoded files onto this system if there is indeed no DRM support on this system. But again, the Viliv P1 might be what you want to turn to if you're looking for a system that plays every single file you can possibly want to play. Until I find out how well it plays all these systems, I'm going to hold back on getting one, and especially considering the fact that I'm not even sure if they're released yet here in the U.S., but when they are, I'll make sure to try and find the first review I can find, and hopefully that review will involve as many of those encodings that that system uses. So for now, A plus the Viliv P1, and you'll certainly be hearing more about this player in the future, because I'm salivating right now. I'm getting hungry thinking about the Viliv P1, and that is really, really odd. Oh boy, I'm a sad case. I'm such a geek. It's a good thing, though. That's why my show's called Geek Speak. I'm a geek. Coincidence? Nah, never mind. Star Trek is cool. I'm not too much of a Trekkie or anything like that, but I've always found Star Trek to be somewhat intriguing. I mean, there were plenty of episodes of Next Generation that I watched and loved, and Voyager I was into for a while. Enterprise I could never really get into, because Scott Bakula will always be Sam Beckett to me, no matter what role he's playing. And seeing him as a commander of the Enterprise was a bit of a stretch for me. I'm actually really, really hoping that they are going to go out there and make that proposed Quantum Leap movie that they were had in the works with sci-fi a little while back. I would really, really love to see that happen, but it didn't really fly for me as a Star Trek captain. And Star Trek fans are going to have a lot of stuff to look forward to, and this comes out of Gamma Sutra. That's a really, really interesting name. Gamma Sutra. That is really awesome. It's like a combination of game and Gamma Sutra. Wow, that was so obvious, and yet I said it anyway. Anyway, visual look development, a case study with Star Trek Online. What is visual look development? Visual look development is the process of nailing down the visual look of a game and how it can be realized in the game engine. The goal is to answer the question, what is your game going to look like and how are you going to do it? By the end, you should have an in-game demo showing your environment at near shippable quality. Keep the area small. If there are multiple environments, develop one at a time. Choose the most important environments first. And it goes on to talk about this Star Trek game. These are the reference shots that were used. It has a whole bunch of reference shots that were used for Star Trek, the game, and how they go about getting this visual situation here. Also, a picture. They have a picture of the Next Generation cast, so I guess that's going to be the ones that it focuses on. But who knows about that? And they have pictures of the Star Trek Online Federation Turbolift demo and the Starship hallway and the observation lounge. And it looks beautiful. It looks absolutely gorgeous. And the idea of a Star Trek Online really gets the mind working, because Star Wars Galaxies and the other Star Wars Online games really did not work nearly as well as they would hoped it would have. They looked for that MMORPG environment, and most people hate it. Then they tried to make it basically a clone of World of Warcraft, and people saw through that pretty easily. So Star Trek might be the place to turn, because Star Wars really didn't do it too well. And let me see now. Let me try and find more information on this Star Trek Online game. And yeah, here we go. This is the Star Trek Online news. Yes, here we go. This is updated as of July 2005, so it's a bit old, but Star Trek Online is a persistent world where hundreds of thousands of players immerse themselves in the world of Star Trek. You will explore the galaxy, defend against incursions, and pursue the needs of the Federation in space and on planet surfaces. Who is making the game? Perpetual Entertainment is a San Francisco-based company created by MMO and networked game veterans with the express purpose of developing groundbreaking persistent world games. When is the beta due? 2006. And the beta is coming damn soon from the looks of things here. What is the intended audience for Star Trek Online? Well, that much is a given. The world of Star Trek Online will be designed with respect to canon and to support an immersive experience for Star Trek, sci-fi, and MMOG fans of all types. What is the current status of development? As of July 2005, the development team is in pre-production, and obviously they're farther along now. And where can I find more information about Star Trek Online? You can go to startrek.perpetual.com, and that's where I'm going right now. See, this is what the internet is all about. It's finding one site which links you to another, which links you to another, which links you to another. It is a chain, and it's a gorgeous chain at that, and I love the internet. I always will. Here's some news. Let's see what we can get here. Okay, they still have news and a visual case study. And let's see here. You know what? I'm going to go to developer log. Let's see if there's any information here. They have information on creating a galaxy-class starship. You know, as I look at this more and more, I'm really thinking they might be really trying to get this right. Because the main thing about Star Wars Galaxies that was the main problem with that is that it really didn't feel like Star Wars to a lot of people. It was way too easy to become a Jedi. That's number one. Jedi was actually a class that you can choose from. I mean, dear God, you know, you should be able to work your way up. You know, start off as a trainee and then work your way up from there. Start off as a paladin and end up a Jedi. But that's not really the way things worked, and that was a problem. But here, from the looks of things, you might even be able to start as an ensign. Woo! And work your way up. And also, it looks like the Star Trek element of flying through space will be preserved pretty damn well. I mean, the best thing you can say about it is that it feels legitimate. It feels like this might be an experience for Trekkies where they're going to have a reason to sit in front of their computer for hours and hours on end, which is definitely nice for them to have some sort of entertainment while preserving their Trekkiness and not switching over to World of Warcraft or anything like that. It's great when fans get something that they deserve. And I'm hoping that Star Trek Online will be something that the Star Trek community deserves, and I hope that it will still be nice and open for people who are not really too much of Star Trek fans, but like the idea of being able to go through space and basically explore brand new worlds, to boldly go where no man has gone before. That was terrible and yet great at the same time. I love myself. Star Trek Online is something I'll be definitely keeping an eye on, and who knows? It might actually turn out to be damn good. I certainly hope it does. Because if it doesn't, I really don't want to be one of those people who has to hear all of the Star Trek fans bitching and moaning. Because, damn it, start actually enjoying things for once. I'm sorry. Come on. So many fans didn't like Enterprise because it wasn't completely in canon. You know, give it a shot, at least, before just completely putting it down. And then there were fans who actually did give it a shot and liked it. I just didn't like it because I couldn't get past the fact that it was Sam Beckett as a star captain. I wanted that last episode to have him leaping out of the body. I've said that to so many people, and they've laughed and said, you know, that wouldn't have been too bad for an ending. But still, as I crack myself up, Star Trek Online might turn out to be pretty damn good. So get yourself on the deck. Warp speed, Mr. Spock. Or Sulu, or Chekhov, or Scotty, or whoever does the warp speed thing. I told you, I'm not too much of a Trekkie. Get off my back! Well, the comic rant has basically become a segment of the show, and over the past couple of weeks, I've been thinking about this, and I really think it's something that would bring some interesting conversation to the table here on GeekSpeak. A lot of the things that I read are restarts, as they were. For instance, Ultimates 2.0 is a great example of that. Ultimates was a series that lasted 12 issues and then was basically canceled in a way. Well, not exactly canceled. It ended. And Mark Miller, I'm going to start saying his name right from now on. It's not Millar, it's Miller. Although I think he should be called Mylar, in my opinion. Nice little comic joke there that I'm sure three people probably got. But then Ultimates 2.0 started up, and that's another 12 issues. And then when that's done, Ultimates 3.0 is going to start up. And it's really starting to get a bit much, in my opinion. Okay, if the book is exactly the same, and the only thing that's changed is the creators, that's called a brand new run. That is not a reason to restart things right off the bat, you know? Give yourselves a sense that one series is following the next, okay? Just by calling it 3.0, you're not going to get that idea. And Marvel needs to learn this. DC needs to learn it also. I love the fact, and I am really happy about this, that 1 year later, it's not going to restart the titles with number ones. It's just going to be the next issue of the series. Sure, things will have changed, but it's still going to be the same series, basically, which is nice. It really is. You know, it's no sense of everything that came before it is gone, and this is what you're going to have to live with. No. Hawkgirl is even staying with its old numbering. Even though it used to be Hawkman, it's now going to become Hawkgirl, and it's still going to be the same numbered issues. They're combining Action Comics with Superman. Or was it the other one? I can't remember which ones. Whichever ones they're combining together, they're getting the original Superman numbers back, and it's going to be basically about, they're going to go from like issue 120 to like issue 650 or something like that. It's really crazy. But that might actually be a good thing. I think that, you know, it's Adventures of Superman and Superman that are getting together, I believe. And if I'm wrong, please correct me. But that's a problem. I mean, Sleeper is a wonderful example, too. Sleeper had seasons, which is kind of interesting if you think about it. But, you know, there was season one of Sleeper, and it was sort of like a TV show, so you can sort of understand it. But it's a TV show in comic book form. But then you've got stuff such as She-Hulk, which wasn't really given a chance, in my opinion. You know, it was given its 12-issue run, and then after that, they outright canceled it. And now they rebooted it as She-Hulk 2.0, as it were, or 3.0, or 4.0, or 8.0. I forget even how many series She-Hulk has gotten. You know, if you're planning on restarting a series, okay, here's some good advice. Let the series run, okay? Let it take its course. I understand that in some aspects, a brand new issue number one is a good way to garner up some hype, as it were, but after a while, it's really going to get old. I mean, Runaways. Runaways really did not need a restart, okay? Runaways second season or 2.0, whatever you would call it, only happened because Runaways got canceled. Okay, had you allowed it to maybe go through the shakiness and catch on, as it has, by the way, Runaways is now much more popular than it ever was before. And in my opinion, it's not because of the restart. It's because people began to notice it. People realized, hey, Brian K. Vaughan is a really awesome writer. I should totally pick up this book. And yet, they restarted it with issue number one. So it's almost as if, hey, you're getting on the ground floor. Well, that's just great. No, you should go back and get the issues that came before to know where it came from. If you pick it up as issue number 13 and just say, brand new story arc, that should be enough. And that's what they're doing with Astonishing X-Men, which I think is a very good idea for them. Even though Astonishing X-Men was gone for maybe 3 or 4 months, Joss Whedon and John Cassaday are now in the works of starting up their next 12-issue run. Begins with issue 13 of Astonishing X-Men. It's not Astonishing X-Men number one all over again, because that would be wrong. It's just issue 13. And the comic companies really need to learn that continuity is a good thing. Okay? Consecutive issues, sequential issues, are a good thing. Marvel Comics learned this. They switched back Fantastic Four to the original numbering on issue 500. It went back to being Fantastic Four, which was a great move. Spider-Man as well. Amazing Spider-Man's back to its original numbering. She-Hulk even had an issue 100, which made so little sense, but there was continuity that came before it. You know, people knew that these other series existed, which is great to see. Daredevil even. Thunderbolts restarted for a stupid reason because they decided to take it in a completely different direction that sucked. Make it into a Fight Club, which it totally is not. And they restarted it. But it could have very well survived on its own had they just decided to go back to the old and stick with what they had that was working before. Issue number one, to me, doesn't mean nearly as much as it used to unless it's a new character or a character that hadn't had a series before. When you start off with issue number one, it almost feels cheap. And that's the way I feel about it. And if anybody has other opinions, by all means, contact me. Let me know how you feel, either on the forums or at speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. I'll be more than happy to hear what you think. But to me, issue number ones aren't nearly as important as the comic industry would think unless it's in a brand new series. That's the way I think about that. Now, one rant to another. Sports time. Wind-up time here on Geek Speak, where we switch things over from the geek side of things to the sports side of things. And there's really only one thing that I could possibly talk about on today's show. And that, of course, is that absolutely crappity crap. And yes, I did say shit because I'm recording this after the fact that I was on the air. This is, of course, the New York Knicks. Oh my God. Dear God in hell, what did they do? They got themselves Steve Francis, all right? What is Steve Francis? Another Stephon Marbury. Yet another player that plays for himself and not the team. He might have been known as the franchise for a long time, but Steve Francis is a dud. An absolute dud. I am in utter disbelief that Isaiah Thomas would go this route. Right away. The first thing that comes to mind, why is he doing this? Simple. He thinks that names will drive people into Madison Square Garden. Hey, here's a thought. Winning will drive people into Madison Square Garden. You are not going to get a winning team simply by getting a guy like Steve Francis on the New York Knicks. I'm outraged. I absolutely am. And for me, I'm surprised that Larry Brown let this happen. How much control does Isaiah Thomas have over this club? Obviously, he's a general manager. Obviously, he's the guy who's paying for everything. Obviously, he's the guy who is making the trades. But Larry Brown is the coach. And as the coach, he needs to set down the ground rules. And as a ground rule, the first rule should be you think about the team and not individual players. And Steve Francis is not a team player. I cannot stress that enough. The Knicks are bound to be terrible for at least the next 4 to 5 years. I never thought I'd have to say that, but that's the way things are looking right now. Because for the next 4 or 5 years, Isaiah Thomas will have his tendrils in the Knicks organization. And they're going to be over the salary cap for the next God knows how many years. The Knicks used to be one of the premier teams in basketball. Now they are a disgrace. The team in Jersey, the Nets, are the true team of New York, and they're not even in New York yet. Okay, it's sad. It's disturbing. But that's the way things are. You're not going to be able to change that anytime soon. But sadly, at this point, I barely even care. The Knicks lost my interest a long time ago. Back in the Ewing days, back in the times when the Knicks were still decent, they still did the exact same thing every single year. They didn't get any younger, and they went to get maybe one experienced guy who they thought would be able to help the team, when in reality, he was a dud. Well, guess what, Knicks? You just got yourself another dud. Prepare to pay that dud a lot of money in the process. It's sad, but it's true. The Knicks are not a good team. The truth hurts, don't it? That was the windup. Now here's the pitch. Every single Monday from 3 to 4 here on Brooklyn College Radio, 1090 AM, and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. You can hear me, Ian Levenstein, along with Jason Green, Joey Maggs, and the ghost of Michael Hornstein, the ghost of Maggie Simpson, and the ghost of Jessica Simpson on The Sporting Goods. The email address for GeekSpeak is speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. That's SPEAKGEEKSPEAK at gmail.com. Don't forget to check out those forums at speakgeekspeak.com/forums. And don't forget to vote for me on Podcast Alley. The link is, of course, at the speakgeekspeak.com homepage. And once again, a program reminder, you should probably have a special edition of GeekSpeak live from my house this weekend, probably on Sunday. After I am done with the New York Comic Con, I will head back home, I'll eat some dinner, and I'll go do a podcast, and it should be a lot of fun. And possibly, and probably, on Thursday, I will have some interviews for you from some of the people who will be attending New York Comic Con. Hopefully, I'll have plenty of great creators that are be nice enough to give me some interviews, and if not, and we still have the experience of being there. And of course, the showcase spotlight focusing upon American animation is coming soon. Check for more information later on. So that's it for today's Geek Speak. I'm Ian Levenstein. Have a great week. Enjoy your geek. Take care, everybody. I will see you on Sunday for another Geek Speak. Thank you very much to David Cook. And I just completely screwed up his name. When you use your Bluetooth test, what's a test? San Francisco, pleaded giver. Anyway, here is the news coming out of reviews.cnet.net. That's all, folks. But there was continuity It's time to speak geek with the geeks. Gaming, tech, news, and more here on Geek Speak. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Brooklyn College Radio, 1090 AM, and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. Let's geek out, everybody.